Welcome to Off Leash and Unfiltered. Trigger warning, I'm Katie Pepe, delivering the truth in dog training. Hey, this is your host, Katie Pepe, owner of Diamond Canine Dog Training in Biddeford, Maine. For those of you that are new here, we specialize in e-collar training, so we help dogs listen, off-leash, and around distractions. Or if your dog's being an absolute total jerk, well, we can help with that too. We do it all, and we do puppy training too. This podcast is just my way of sharing, well, everything with you guys, the good, the bad, the ugly, and I will always be honest about how to fix the problems you might be dealing with your dog. So we're not your average super floofy dog training podcast. We are real and honest around here. What you can do is hit subscribe so that you don't miss an episode and so that you can help support the podcast. Every subscribe or follow helps us so much so I can keep putting out this content. We appreciate you. And without further ado, let's jump in. And we're talking about separation anxiety today. Welcome to our second episode of our prevention series, where we're talking about three big issues that we see with dogs: resource guarding, separation anxiety, and reactivity, especially toward other dogs. So we've already covered resource guarding. Today we're talking about separation anxiety. Man. There's a very broad spectrum when we're talking about separation anxiety, right? As there is with anything, I suppose. But I have seen separation anxiety at levels that absolutely would preclude these people from keeping their dog. So it can be absolutely life-destroying. I've met many people, honestly. It's not super common to meet people that have this level of an issue with it, of course, but I have met many people over the years who can't leave their dog. They literally cannot leave their dog alone. The dog has to go everywhere with them. They cannot just leave the house and leave the dog there. And if they have to, then that means they have to hire a sitter for the dog. Just like a child, they absolutely cannot leave the dog at home. Because the dog is destructive, will tear things apart, will get into things that will hurt them, will hurt themselves, will rip their teeth out if they put them in a kennel, will bark and howl, will get them kicked out of their apartments, all this stuff. It's like, it's just nutso. And, you know, it's not always that severe, but even moderate separation anxiety can be very, very stressful. The dog can still get hurt, your things can still get ruined, you can still get kicked out of your apartment. It's like, if you have a dog that's just noisy the whole time you're gone, that's a problem. And obviously the dog's not comfortable, right? So it's like, we want to fix that if we can, because it's going to be better for everybody. So let's talk about separation anxiety a little bit. This is the prevention series, right? So although this isn't for, although we're not covering how to fix separation anxiety, we're talking about how to prevent it. Everything we're going to talk about today is absolutely relevant to somebody who's dealing with separation anxiety right now. So even if your dog already has and is already displaying separation anxiety and you're already wrestling with it, even though this is called the quote unquote prevention series, everything we're going to talk about today is stuff you should start implementing. So we're not covering protocols on how to address it once it's being exhibited. We're not really talking about that today. But nonetheless, everything we are going to talk about in terms of prevention are things I would tell people to implement if they're dealing with it. So it's certainly worth a listen, even if your dog is already displaying these things. So separation anxiety, I think, like a lot of behaviors, people often attribute it to their behavior and the environment the dog is being raised in.
And obviously, there is some truth to that, right? Because that's what we're going to talk about today. Because you can't control the uncontrollables, right? We're going to talk about the things you can control, which is you. So, yes, there is an element of that. But just like everything else, that's not all that matters. I think it's so important to remember if your dog displays separation anxiety, that is coming from within. That is who they are. They had the genetic material to go down that train track. Right? So you can have two dogs and you can do everything, quote unquote, right? Right? Everything we're going to talk about today and still have a dog that struggles with separation anxiety. And you can have a dog where you don't do any of this stuff. And you're very, very soft with them, and they're always stuck to your side, and they don't have any separation anxiety at all. Right? And so when I say that, I'm not trying to take the power away from you. I wouldn't be doing this podcast or this episode if you didn't have any power. I'm just saying it pays to remember that you don't control the universe, that your dog isn't a blank slate. And that there are pre-programmed genetic behaviors already in your dog. Even if you're not seeing them now, and you might see them later, it's already in there. Your dog is coded in a manner that decides what their proclivities are. So, yeah, we want to remind you of that. But at the same time, we want to say if you want to create the most balanced dog possible and the most balanced, healthy relationship possible and give your dog the best chance of success, these are the things you do, right? And if you do these things, there's a very small chance that you're still going to have trouble. Very small, right? But there's still a chance because every dog is different. Anywho, genetics aside, because you can't do much about that besides try to pre-select for a dog with good genetics, and even then, there's no guarantee. What do we do? What do we do to set our dog up for the best chance of success? Well, if you're bringing home a puppy, there are lots of things that you'll hear people say about what you should and shouldn't do, right? Or even if you're bringing home a new dog, but it's an older dog, right? Everyone has an opinion on what you should and shouldn't do. Some of them were probably covered in our myths episode that we just put out. And things like, don't let your dog sleep in your bed or, things like that. And there's some truth to that. But so I want to talk about all of those things. And I also want to take just a second, real quick, to remind folks, it's like, even if your dog is great and well balanced, even if they're not a puppy, right? Because I always say, oh, when your dog's a puppy, you don't actually know what you have yet, right? Your dog might seem fine as a puppy, and then all of a sudden they're not fine once they get to be 6 months, 8 months, 12 months old. And that's normal because you're not seeing the full dog when they're a puppy, right? They have to go through that maturation process, and then you might see behaviors that are activated with all the hormones and everything and everything that occurs during that process. And there's never a point where you're like, okay, I'm seeing everything my dog is capable of because behaviors can just spontaneously generate any time. I mean, that's just how it works. It's how brains work, right? So I'm not a morning person, but last week I decided I was just sick of not being able to get anything done. And I set my alarm for 5 a.m. and I got up and I came to work. right? And normally I don't do that, especially since I'm up very late at night trying to get things done. But it's a constant struggle. And then I don't get enough sleep. And it's really, you know, it's almost impossible to get up in the morning. And my circadian rhythm has just never been that way anyway. But I said, that's it. You know, I'm going to try it. I'm going to get up really early. I'm going to fight through it. And I'm going to get some stuff done. It's going to feel good. And freaked my husband out, man. Why? Because I've never done that before. That's not to say I've never gotten up in the morning, but not when I don't have to, right? I have an appointment. I have to bring my daughter to school. I have to do this or that. Without any of those things, just choosing on my own to do that has never happened. We've been together for a decade. I've never done it. I don't think I've ever done it once. But I did it last week and I did it today. And so when dogs do that, it leaves owners going, why? You could beat yourself up, rack your brain, and drive yourself nuts trying to figure that out, because that's how behavior works. That's why. So it doesn't matter why, but it does pay to understand and to remember that just because your dog seems fine right now or has never done anything right now doesn't mean they won't tomorrow. I have a client right now whose dog is 10 years old, and she's here because all of a sudden he's biting people. And he's going code red nuts when she leaves the house. Especially, and a lot of people will find this bizarre, if she leaves the house and then has to turn around and come back in for something, like she left her keys or her phone or something like that. She has to actually think about how she's going to get back into the house, because the dog is going to be so crazed, he will probably bite her. And it's not even like he thinks she's an intruder and he's attacking her. It's not aggressive in that sense. It's just pure chaotic arousal. It's just so over the top. He's not thinking. He's just an absolute mess with teeth. And so she's 10 years in. He's never done this before. Right? And he has been checked out by a vet. No, he doesn't have a brain tumor. I know that's what everybody's thinking. And sometimes that does happen, but usually that's not the case. Usually it's just behavior changes, right? And there might be other things in the body that are changing, hormones changing, and, you know, just all the things that happen as your dog matures and as your dog ages. Biologically, things change. Behaviorally, things change. Mentally, things change. It's all tied together. But things can change anytime. So, because one thing that I feel like I see a lot is people think their dog either is or isn't. And that just isn't true. It doesn't matter if we're talking about aggression, reactivity, separation anxiety, friendliness, aloofness. There is no is or isn't. Like, everything really is a spectrum, and your dog, it has it all in there to some degree or other. Right? The ability to kill prey is in your dog. Even if you have a cute little fluffy dog who seems so sweet, and you feel like would never hurt a flea, it's in there. It's in there somewhere. You might never see it. Your dog might live to be 19 years old and you never see it. That's true. Or they might get to be 9 years old and you see it. Okay. You just don't know. So anyway, enough rambling on about all of that. Now, that might be another episode, another episode altogether. Let's talk about how to avoid creating separation anxiety, or have the best chance of avoiding creating separation anxiety, or nurturing, that proclivity in your dog towards separation anxiety if they have it. So, I think number one is very, very common to hear this, it's like, don't have your dog sleeping in your bed with you. And I'm not anti-dog in the bed, okay? But if you have a puppy, don't have them sleeping in your bed overnight with you. And I'm not saying they can never get on your bed. That's not what I'm saying. But number one, it's king's quarters, right? So I talk about that a lot. But number two, it's like, when do you practice separation? Like, it seems like nighttime and sleeping is an ideal time to do that because you're asleep anyway. Like, you're not spending quality time with your dog. And it just really, really plays into that creating a codependency. Right? And it's one of the harder things for young puppies because they've probably had litter mates and mom to sleep with. But it's like, that's one of the harsh realities of growing up and becoming well-adjusted is you're separated from them now. This is the real world. And you have to learn that it is okay to be alone. And it is okay to sleep alone. And you're okay. And they can't learn that if you take that opportunity away from them by then you jumping into that role and never letting them experience, hey, I'm okay on my own. It's all right. It's not so bad. They can only learn that if you allow them to. So when you have a young puppy, don't take that away from them. Right. And again, when you have a young puppy, you don't know who they are yet. So at least wait until they're 9, 10 months old, 12 months old. Right. That first year is so critical. Let them experience that first year with all of the tools that help them become confident and balanced. And then if you want to start trying some of that stuff, go ahead, right? If you're not seeing any issues, go ahead. You can always dial it back if you feel like things are starting to go in a direction you don't like, right? But it's not really like that with a young puppy, right? You're really doing them a disservice if you spend that first year nurturing dependency, and then you find out that this dog has a real problem with dependency and attachment and anxiety, right? Because the thing is, like we just talked about, you don't know yet if your dog has those tendencies. And so rather than wait and see and give them the best chance of success, you're going, doesn't matter to me. We're just going to do this anyway. And then you get 6, 10, 12, 18 months into it, and potentially you have a dog that's a real mess, and you're partially responsible for that. Right? Because it's a marathon, not a sprint, and we didn't want to wait and see. We didn't want to do the hard work now while they're young. And we have the most impact when they're that young, by the way. Right? Yes, your dog can learn anytime. But it's the brain is still developing. You have a much, much better shot at uncrossing some of those wires, so to speak. Right? Wiring your dog to be more confident, more balanced, and having a permanent impact on their personality. You have much, much more ability to do that when your dog is very young. Especially when they're very young, right? When you first bring them home, they're 8, 12 weeks old, 4 months old, right? That's the time to do the hard stuff that nobody likes to do. That's when you have the most impact. But sleeping in your bed is a big one. It's like, that is earned, right? Through good behavior, but also through just showing me that we don't have codependent issues. We don't have anxiety issues. Right? And that takes time because you can't see that when they're 3 months old. So that's not a good time to have your dog in your bed. But certainly if your dog exhibits any separation issues, like, get them out of your bed, guys. Okay? Structure. So getting your dog out of your bed is part of that, right? But utilizing structure. So allowing your dog to just roam around. We talk about this all the time. I'm like a broken record, I know, and I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it right now. But it applies here as well. Now, getting your dog out of your bed is part of that structure, right? Because we're going to tell you, hey, use a kennel at a minimum overnight when you're sleeping and when you're gone. But as far as separation anxiety goes, it's like, make sure you're using that kennel even sometimes during the day when you're home. Especially if you have a young puppy, you should be anyway, because you should really be limiting that freedom a lot early on. This should be a very gradual process to really integrate them into the house, roaming around. If you ever do, but it should be gradual. But here's what it does. Like, having your puppy or your dog in the kennel during the day, while you're awake, oh my God, can you believe the atrocity? Oh, how cruel it is. What it does is it forces your dog to build some coping skills. So not all, but a lot of dogs with separation issues, especially serious separation issues, they can't tolerate being in the kennel and seeing their owner, their family, out of reach, right? They're there, but they can't get to them. They see them doing things, but they can't go inject themselves in it. They can't follow you to the bathroom. So even if your dog doesn't have a hard time with that, let's make sure it stays that way. Put them in the kennel and let them see you doing the dishes, making dinner, going into different rooms, coming in and out of sight. Normalize that, right? People don't. They let their puppy follow them around all the time. They think it's great. A lot of things will tell you. And it's like, yeah, I do too. Sometimes, right? Yeah, when your dog is out of the kennel, nurture that. Hey, follow me. Pay attention to me. But also be okay with not being able to do that.
Love the podcast? Well, I have great news. We are now offering an inexpensive subscription where you can get access to our new premium content. This content isn't available to our general listeners. It's made just for you. It includes all kinds of behind the scenes stuff, all the obstacles and how we're overcoming them with our board and trained dogs, and the most difficult part of our job, how we deal with overcoming obstacles with our clients. So all kinds of new, cool, interesting stuff for you to get out of those episodes. You can jump down into the show notes and there will be a link to our support page where you can sign up and start listening right away. Thanks for your support. Enjoy the rest of the show.
And a lot of times I find people are gravitating toward one or the other, right? And usually it's the softness and it's the follow me around, and it's the be with me and all that stuff. And it's like, just like everything else, you're going to hear me say, you need both. Yeah, when my puppy's out of the kennel, I do want them paying attention to me. I do want them following me. I do want them to respond to their name. I do want them curious about what I'm doing. I do want them engaged. I want all those things. But I also want to be able to put my puppy in the crate and they're cool. It's no big deal. If they can't do that, you have a problem. And the thing is, even if they can do it today, how do you know they're going to be able to do it tomorrow if you don't keep doing it? Right? So you can't just put your puppy in there for a day or two and then go, yep, they're fine. They can do it. Well, so what? That can change fast, man. This is something you need to keep up. Okay? And then, you know, once you teach a good place command, we like to use that. So I was just telling you about the lady with the dog that goes absolutely crazy when she leaves the house now. He's 10 years old. And she can't even come back into the house if she needs something because he is completely out of control and dangerous. Well, during her last two private lessons, we have rehearsed putting him on place while she walks away, which at first she couldn't take two steps. And then we rehearsed. She walks across the room and then out of the room. And this was nearly impossible the first couple times we did it. And she had to learn how to enforce that boundary with him. And it was hard. And it was hard for her emotionally. It was very hard for her. And she has a dog that's kind of a hunting breed. He's a Springer. And he's not a real sensitive guy physically anyway. So his e-collar numbers tend to be a little higher. And when he gets into that frantic state of mind, it's extremely high. And so we had to show her how to work him through that, how to overcome that intensity to get him back onto the cot without grabbing his leash and pulling him. Right? Because that's what will happen if she's too low on her e-collar. By the way, we have spent tons of time teaching him place with the e-collar. This isn't his first day. Okay? And she's done a fantastic job. He knows it very well. And so now we had to show her when he gets frantic and he gets off there because he needs to be stuck to you, we're going to show you what to do with your e-collar to come in above his intensity and motivate him to actually go back and stay there. And I know everyone's going, well, how high was it? What was the number, right? It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It's going to look different for every dog. But you will find most of the time that the more anxious, more frantic, more aroused, more afraid, more anything, the higher that number is. So when we get a dog that flips a switch and just goes code red crazy, the number's really high a lot of the time. And I think during most of that session, we were between a 40 and a 75. You know what? Better than last time. That was actually an improvement over last time. And when I say improvement, all I really mean is the numbers being a little bit lower indicates to me that his state of mind was a little bit better. His arousal, his stress, and his anxiety were a little bit lower than last time. That's all I mean by that. And we also rehearsed putting him in the kennel and having her leave the space, go through the door out of sight. And the last time she was here, right, not this past time, but the time before that, it was ugly. So I held the remote and I dealt with the dog, but I showed her what I was doing because she needed to go home and replicate this. And the dog was in the kennel, barking, crying, screaming, howling, drooling, pawing. And I started on my remote 30s, 40s, went up 50s, 60s, went up 70s, 80s. I was on 100, right? And that all happened very quickly because I'm experienced enough that I know I'm getting, like, there was zero difference. I'm not going to spend my time in the same spot if I'm seeing zero difference. And I don't want to talk too much about this because, again, like, this isn't an episode on how to deal with separation anxiety, but it is very informative, I think. There's no point in spending your time in that same range if you're not seeing any impact. Like, there's no indication that he cares about it at all, right? So we have to make some big jumps until we see a change. And I was on 100, and I had to play with it at 100 a little bit before he finally was quiet. And then he sat there very quiet for quite a while. He was still stressed. He was still drooling. But, you know, and people will say that and think, oh, the dog is so, like, he's already really stressed out. And now you do this and be more stressed out. That just isn't how it works. It's just not. The first step to relaxing in there is to be quiet. So we'll do whatever we need to do, as long as it doesn't cause harm, to get him to be quiet so that he can see it's okay. Right, he has to experience being in there and being quiet to see it's okay. And it will gradually get better and better and better. And clearly it is, because he came back the next time, which was a couple weeks later, and we did it again, and it was much easier. Much easier. He went in without too much trouble. And I think we had to tap the remote once. Whereas last time, I had to sit there and play with it for a few minutes. And I had to keep increasing my levels. We didn't have that this time. Huge improvement from just one lesson to the next, right? And so now she's got to go home and replicate that. So if you have a dog that's that crazy at a very young age, like if you have a dog that's 8 weeks, 12 weeks, 16 weeks, and they're like breaking teeth to get out of the kennel to get to you, they're yodeling and yelling and screaming, they're having diarrhea all over the place because they're so stressed, they're destroying things, it's like, you've got a real problem. You probably know that. Okay? And you cannot leave anything on the table. You need to go full hog. You need to jump into the deep end. And you need to get serious about implementing all the stuff we're going to talk about here today. But most likely, you know, if your dog's sort of middle of the road, what you're going to see is just whining and restlessness. You know, they might protest the crate because they know when they go in there, they can't follow you around. They're separate from you, right? Or really common stuff is like always pawing at you and demanding attention. They might guard you a little bit, especially as they get older. So a lot of people see more of these middle of the road things, right? You leave, your dog runs to the window to watch you, maybe barks at you. That sort of stuff. So if you're seeing that, make sure you implement this stuff, right? But even if you're not seeing any of this stuff, it's like implementing this will just make sure that you keep your dog's mind right, right? That you really minimize the chance of this stuff surfacing at some point, right? But if nothing else, right, if your dog's doing great and you do decide, hey, they don't need a high level of structure and they're going to sleep in my bed and all these other things that I'm about to cover, it's like, okay, but just watch, right? And be honest with yourself about what you're seeing. So if you start seeing some of these little red flags, then kick it up a notch and implement these things, right? So stop having your dog in your bed, especially if they're a young puppy or a new dog. Use structure. So don't have them free all day. Use your kennel. Let them see you from their kennel while you're doing stuff. Use your place command if you've taught the place command and enforce it, right? So they have to stay there. They can't follow you around and attach themselves to you all the time. Stop taking them everywhere with you. So yes, from an exposure and socialization perspective, taking your dog all these places is fantastic. And I'm not telling you not to do that. But your dog never gets to be home alone, which is important. Don't take your dog everywhere with you all the time. It's great if you have a job where you can bring your dog to work. Don't do it every day. Your dog, believe it or not, will live if you leave him at home alone for 8 hours. Now, if you've got a job where you can bring your dog with you, great. Do that. Don't do it every day. Or if you do, make sure there are other times that your dog is home alone. But here's the thing. At least make sure, you know, put your dog in the crate, go to the grocery store and get groceries, right? Run your errands. Like, make sure your dog gets time at home completely alone regularly. And I recommend they're in the crate. It's the safest place for them. Here's the thing. Leaving your dog at home while you go to work for, like, especially if it's 6 hours, 8 hours, even 9 hours, right? 10 hours is a long time. Your dog has to fit into your life. If your workday is 10 hours, it's 10 hours. Maybe you can hire a dog walker or something. Like, that'd be great. But it's good for the human, right? Because what happens is we get into a space where it's like, we start to actually think our dog can't be home alone all day. We think they can't, right? Because we never do it. But they can. They can be home and they'll be okay. They'll be okay. It's easy to just kind of create this false reality in our head because we have this feeling, or we had this feeling, and so we've always done things a certain way. And so now we just believe it to be a fact. Like, what do you think is going to happen? Do you really think that your dog can't hold their bladder while you're at work? Again, I'm very pro, like, dog walker, or if you have a trusted friend or neighbor, like somebody who knows what they're supposed to do, like, come let your dog out. Great, do that. But if you can't, it's okay. Your dog will be okay for the day. Lots of people work and they have to leave their dog at home for the day. The dog's all right. Right? Let them out in the morning. Give them plenty of time so they can do all their business and maybe even get a little exercise. And they'll be okay till you get home. Especially if you have someone to come let them out. But your dog spending time alone is important for your dog and for you, so that you don't start to become more, I have to, I have to, I have to. And I used to be that person. I was certain that, like, everything was going to fall apart if I left my dog at home. If they were alone too long, if they didn't get out fast enough, right? I was always stressed by it. I'd be out trying to do my errands, do my work, whatever it was. And it was always, I have to get home. I have to get home. I have to get home. Right? So my stuff wouldn't get done. Things wouldn't get done right. Because, like, I have to get home. Gonna let my dog out. Gonna let my dog out. Dog's fine. Dog's fine. Right? If you get home a little later than usual, dog doesn't get out as fast as you'd like. They eat a little bit later than they normally do. It's okay. I'm not saying neglect your dog. I'm just saying, especially if it's like a one-off, right? It's not your dog's life. It's not every day. It's just today. Your dog is going to be fine. So it might take your stress level down a little bit to start to experience, it's okay. If I go to work for 7 or 8 hours and, like, leave my dog at home, I get to see he's all right, right? So I think that's a good idea once in a while, even if your dog's fine with it, just to make you fine with it. So stop taking your dog absolutely everywhere all the time. Make sure they get some time alone. And if you work from home, so you just happen to be home all the time, then you need to intentionally leave the house. Not necessarily every day, but regularly, right? Leave the house and make sure your dog is there by themselves at a time when there's no one else there. Like, the kids are at school, husband's at work, or, you know, whatever. You go get groceries or run errands or just go outside and mow the lawn or go outside and read a book. Like, I don't care, but leave the house. We want to make sure that you don't put your dog in a position where they've just never even experienced that. That's not fair. Again, you're taking away the opportunity for them to see it's fine. Here's a big one. Constant touching. So many people are always doing this to their dog and they don't even realize it, right? Because they're, like, doing it for their own sake and their own anxiety appeasement. It's very, very natural. Even I want to touch dogs a lot of the time when I shouldn't. And I have to be conscious of that and dial it back. And I'll catch myself sometimes starting to do it. So there's nothing wrong with you, but that's something you want to become aware of, because that constant affection absolutely will nurture that codependent nature that some dogs have, right? Especially a dog that's always coming into your space. And that's why we teach that from the time they're young puppies. I don't allow them to always just come butt right into my space and reward it with affection. I don't. I'll use their leash and I'll give them a little leash pop and use leash pressure to kind of set a boundary. Like, hey, you can't just climb into my lap and up into my face. Like, no, right? Or I'll bump them a little bit with my arm, right? So I'm not hitting them or kicking them, but it's a bump with the body part, right? And you don't want to just push them off with your hands, which is what most people would do if they're trying to set a boundary. They would use their hands. But to the dog, it's just, it's almost like petting or playing. And people tend to spend too long with the fingers, like, on the dog. You really want to use, like, your wrist, your arm, to just kind of tap them, like, in the chest, right? And sort of bump them off and just set that boundary. Like, hey, you can't just climb all over me and get into my space and demand things from me. So that can help with a dog that's going to be really pushy, but it also can help with a dog that's going to be really super needy. To just help set boundaries. And again, when you do that, you're giving your dog a chance to experience that they don't have to do it. Things are fine. They are okay. There is life outside of being attached to me. Your well-being doesn't depend on you being attached to me. So constant touching and affection, allowing them to always get up into your space, right? And we have several things for that. We've already talked about the crate, the place command. You can have a leash on them, especially if it's a puppy, have them dragging a leash. So you can use that leash to give them a little pop, some pressure, like just set that boundary that you don't want them in your space right now. And if they keep coming back, then they're telling you you're being too soft and too gentle. Don't be afraid to send the memo home, right? I'm not telling you to hurt your puppy. Don't fling them to the moon or anything. Don't swing them around over your head, right? But people tend to be, they think their puppy's made of glass, right? Just tell them, use your leash, learn how to give a little leash pop and set a boundary or tap with your arm or your wrist if that's works better for you. But that constant touching is a big one. We're always doing this. I'll see people here in their private lessons, especially if it's sort of a down moment where we're talking, and it just never stops. It never stops. You gotta stop. Stop touching the dog. I'm not saying you can't pet your dog, right? But be mindful of it, because when you do it all the time, especially in a real soft, especially if it's like soft and fast and frantic, it's just the worst, right? Especially if your dog is in a needy space at that moment, or they're in a nervous space or an anxious space, and you're just petting away. It's the worst thing you can do. So dial that back a little bit. Practice spending time more neutrally with your dog. Sharing space with a dog. I've talked about this in the past, but I don't talk about it a ton. I really love sharing space with a dog in a neutral way. So there's nothing wrong with the occasional cuddle for most dogs. But they don't have to be in your lap. You don't have to be touching them. Like, just sharing space where I'm on the couch and they're on the floor right next to me. Or they're on their place cot and I'm in a chair. Whatever it is. But we're near each other, but we're not touching, right? And we might just be sitting, or we might be reading a book, or we might be out on the grass. It doesn't matter, but we're just being quiet and still and together. Is really, really nice. I just feel like it's an intimate way to really share just calm, balanced energy with your dog. It's really, really great. And it might help make you more aware of your need to always be stroking your dog, which might not be good for either of you. So that's a big one. And, you know, we talked a little bit about place, like put your dog on place and walk away, like practice that. Now, if you're, you know, if your dog is doing great and not having any trouble, that should be pretty easy for you to do. So it's like, do that now and set that boundary now and set up that accountability now where your dog is okay with being on place and like you leave the room, you even go outside, that sort of thing. And that way, in the event, if you do start seeing some of those separation anxiety signs creep in, you now have a tool you've already created that you can use to really set things right back on the right track. Right. So you're setting yourself up for success by doing these things, even though you might feel like you don't need to. Right. Your dog's fine. Your dog's fine. But it's like they might not be fine someday. And you won't have any of these tools available to you because you just haven't set them up. Right. But doing these things beforehand really, really helps reduce the likelihood that you're ever going to have a problem. Like, why wouldn't you want that? Right? So young puppies and new dogs, like, don't have them sleep in your bed. Right? If you want to do that later on, once things look good, go ahead. Right? But if you start seeing signs creep in that your dog is getting too needy, dial it back. But set your dog up for success by making sure they're okay just sleeping in their kennel at night. Don't do constant cuddling on the couch. Share some neutral space. Put your dog on place. Make sure you can walk away. Don't touch your dog constantly, stroking, stroking, stroking. When you do touch them, be conscious of how you're doing it, right? You don't want frantic petting. Firm, slow petting is really ideal. And I mean, you don't overthink it, right? You can pet your dog. It's okay. But with dogs that are tending to get needy, like, it's really important not to just always be touching and feeding that anxiety, feeding that neediness, and that codependency. Make sure your dog's alone sometimes. Don't take them absolutely everywhere all the time. Yes, get your dog their socialization and exposure, but make sure they stay home sometimes when you're out running your errands and doing your things and, you know, going to work. Make sure your dog gets time where they're actually truly alone in the house and that they're okay with it. And kennel them up when you do that, because that's the safest place for them. I think that's it. Use that structure. Keep them out of your bed. Don't bring them absolutely everywhere with you. Don't be constantly touching them. Don't allow them to bombard into your space all the time and reward it with touching. I really like that, setting that boundary with puppies when they're young. It's really, really valuable. So that's it. Those are the keys for setting your dog up for the highest chance of success and the lowest chance of becoming a super needy, anxious dog who dictates your entire life. It's like I said, some people can't even leave the house. So implement these things, guys, and it's going to keep you on the right track.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If there's a topic you'd like to hear discussed, you can send that to me directly at katie@diamondcanine.com via email. So I will link to that email address in the show notes. Thanks for joining us today, guys. Thanks for supporting the podcast, and I look forward to the next one.